Great.
I have to make a shout out very quickly to Michelle, who is going to be our technology genius. Okay. I'm going to give a 2-minute quick qualification. I'm 9+ years abstinent. I've been following sober eating since attending the sober eating workshop in 2019 at the LA birthday party. I've kept off 110 pounds for the very first time in my entire life, and I've lost 100 pounds at least 10 times with every imaginable way to do it. Here are some of the highlights of my recovery and the promises I have received. I have what's called food neutrality. I don't want to eat when things come up. I am feeling feelings and knowing I won't die over them. And I'm able to live life on life's terms, which means ups and downs and all arounds. Here is where I have found like-minded fellows and learned a way to look at food through the steps, the principles, and the tools of OA. So this is just a way of abstinence. I still work the OA program. So here's a quick overview of the workshop. We're going to have two main speakers sharing their experience, strength, and hope as it relates to sober eating for 10 minutes each. We're going to take a quick break for Seventh Tradition. We're going to have two moderators reviewing the sober eating principles, which will have slides. We are going to invite a volunteer to work the sober eating worksheet. Then we will go to our breakout rooms with facilitators to go over the worksheets. So again, please go to the chat and print out the worksheets if you're online so you'll have them. And finally, we will wrap up with 10 minutes of Q&A. All right? So the first person I'm going to introduce is Lindsay. And where are you, Lindsay? Great. Lindsay is going to share her experience, strength, and hope. She is a very valued participant of sober eating and has contributed a lot. And there you go. Go, Lindsay.
Hi, thank you, Reba. Hi, everyone. I'm Lindsay, and I am a compulsive overeater. And whoa, I just got really big on my screen. Hold on. I have to remove this, otherwise I'm going to be really distracted. Okay, there we go. All right. Gosh, every time I was there, I'm being timed, right? You're timing me for 10 minutes, or do I need to time myself? I can hold on. Okay.
Can
I'll
you
time
get
you.
yourself? We'll get you, Lindsay.
Someone.
you. Okay, cool. All right. So, I am a gutter level like heroin addict with the food. My story is when I came into the rooms, and when I say came in, I mean I wasn't even like crawling. Like I was just like on my face, like barely getting in, you know. And I was 350 pounds, and I wanted to end my life. Like I did not want to be alive. I hated my existence. Like you know, I got to that place where like I couldn't live with the food and I couldn't live without the food. And I was actually in a meeting this morning where we were reading Bill's story, and it was page 5 where it talks about, you know, liquor had ceased to become a luxury and it became a necessity. And it talked about, you know, how his house was getting taken over by the mortgage holder. And nevertheless, he still thought he could control the situation. And that is my experience. You know, I ate in like very like violent, animalistic, disturbing ways. It takes a lot of food to maintain and gain from 350 pounds of someone that's 5'3", you know. So I ate in ways I hear someone in sober eating say, like, I don't want to see the footage of it, and I don't want you to see the footage of it. I don't want anyone to ever see the way that I ate. It's really disturbing and it's violent. And I was destroying my life. So I'm someone that, you know, I was going to the bathroom on myself in my own car. I was leaving work in the middle of the day to binge, and then I would just cancel all my meetings, go home, turn my phone over on my bedside table, and it was like stick the needle in my arm, I'm done. Like that, like I was eating to disappear. I was eating for oblivion. I didn't want to be in the world. I wanted out. I thought that any feeling I ever had would kill me. Like I truly didn't think I could survive it. I was getting kicked out of my apartment. I had an eviction notice on my door because I was spending more money on food than what I earned. And I had to get my parents to help me. And I promised them that this time I meant business. I'm going to go to OA. I'm going to get the help I need. I'm going to do better, right? And that's the thing. It was like, just like Bill and Bill's story, nevertheless, I still thought I could control the situation. Like my life was literally circling the drain. It had become so small. I hated my existence. And I still thought, okay, this time I mean business. This time I'm going to do better. And I really meant it. And the thing is that, like, if I could have done better, I would have done better. But the thing is, I am powerless. Like I'm truly powerless over food, and a power greater than me separated me from my obsession to kill myself with food over 4.5 years ago. And every single day of those 4.5 years, a power greater than me is separating me from the food. That's the only explanation for this, because I'm telling you, I'm somebody that couldn't even get a half of a day out of the food. And I would come to these meetings and I would see you all like smiling, and I would see you at like healthy body weights. And I was like, these people don't understand me. This will not work for me. What I have is so much worse than what they have. They don't understand, right? And I was always one of the unfortunates in my mind. And I really thought that. Like something's just so wrong with me. And I would try, and I would say I meant business, and I would eat. And I would call into meetings while binging and while going through a drive-through. So for anybody here right now, and you're off camera and you're eating, or you just binged, or you're about to, like, we are so glad you're here. And keep coming back and call us. And please know that, like, I am you and you are me, and there is hope here. There truly is hope here in these rooms. And so what sober eating looks like in my recovery is that I had to get really clear about what foods are for me, like alcohol is for the alcoholic. When I first came in, it was like, just do 3 meals a day, nothing in between, or, make your abstinence box. And I would just put a couple of things in there, oh, I know I can't eat, cake. Okay, great. But it was like that willy-nilly stuff didn't work for me. The gray area does not work for me. So the idea of sober eating is, and I'm not in another substance program, so I don't have this experience, but I would imagine that in the program of AA, it is very clear if you're using or not using. It's very clear. I don't think there's really any gray area. So for me, I had to do that same thing with food. What are my alcoholic foods, and what are my alcoholic food ingredients? And I had to work with another person to determine what those are. And then, I ended up getting a dietitian, and I have a sponsor, and my sobriety starts on my plate. I had to get crystal clear, black and white with food, get a food plan and follow it, and become entirely abstinent from my alcoholic foods and food ingredients. And then I was able to actually access the solution. So, I hate to burst anyone's bubble, but if you're coming here thinking that the sober eating women are going to give you a diet, that is not what this is. The solution here is a power that is greater than me. I am only able to access that power because I am no longer using my alcoholic foods and food ingredients. And so then, I began working the steps, and was able to access this God, that I didn't even want to say that word when I got here. I was not going to because I didn't need it, but clearly I did. Clearly I finally got to the point, and this is something I love about sober eating, is the idea is just like, my ideas aren't working, so let me just do what someone else tells me to do just for one day. Like, let me just say, okay, I need help. I want to eat. I need help. Tell me what to do. What do I do? And then, my ideas got me to 350 pounds. My ideas got me to 350 pounds and not wanting to be in the world anymore. So maybe, just maybe, there's a better idea out there, And then now, like I said, I have 4.5 years of food sobriety. And, I love that idea of like, I was separated from my food obsession. I was separated from my alcoholic foods, from the relentless desire to binge all day, every day. I was separated from that by a power that's greater than me. And now, I have a very big, very full life. And I'm here to tell you that doesn't always look like sunshine and rainbows. As a result of having a bigger, fuller life, sometimes there's more pain. There's more joy. There's more joy, and there's also more pain. And I'm learning that I can hold both of those things, and that I can have a full living experience, and I don't have to use food. And that is something I also like about sober eating, is what we do in this group is we talk about food and using in like hardcore, like drug addict, alcoholic terms. Like I'm using, like that's what it is. It's like a drug addict or an alcoholic with the food. That's how I am. And like I had to use my food to get through the day, whether it was good or bad or in between. And as a result of surrendering the food, being willing to get clear, follow a plan, talk about what's really going on my plate, then now I have this free life that I'm living, where now I have to talk about what's going on in my life, just like I talked about what was going on in my plate. Like it's a whole thing. Everything with the food transitions to life and back and forth, right? It's a design for living that works. And I truly, I'm so grateful. I never thought I would be a person with a story of recovery to share. So again, there's a lot of hope here. And with that, I will pass.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. Can you hear me? Yes? Okay, great. So now I'm going to introduce Danielle, who's also a very strong sober eating example and participant. Danielle.
Thanks, Reva. Thank you, Lindsay, and everyone involved in this workshop. Thank you. Hi, my name's Danielle G, and I'm a compulsive overeater, and I am so incredibly grateful to be able to share this gift of recovery that I've received with all of you. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous and abstinent for over 3 years, since July 26, 2022. My top weight was 260 pounds, and I've been maintaining a healthy body weight. I've lost 125 plus pounds, and I've been a healthy body weight for over 2 years, which is the longest I've ever had in my life. I'm also 5'3". And I just want to talk about what it looked like before I became sober with food. When I was young, I just remember, going to the refrigerator and eating hot dogs cold. Like I would just take them out and just eat them because I was afraid that my parents would hear me turning the microwave on. And we had all these rules and things like stipulations around food. And I actually continued that same mentality forever, just like hiding my eating, and I was in shame, and I knew that something was different about me by the time I hit fourth grade and I was 110 pounds. This is as consistent throughout my entire life as I can remember. But the consequences of my eating really started to roll in when I didn't have any boundaries anymore and I moved out of my parents' house and I had freedom to, warm up my hot dogs and eat them anytime. And I had the freedom to eat cake for breakfast. And I did that very, very often. And it just progressed my disease as I got older. I had all these milestones. What I can recall are like, okay, when I got stretch marks, I would turn my life around. When I was, 150, then 200, then 250, and it'll the bar would always just get higher for me, and I would just, make these unachievable goals that I didn't know because of my disease were not possible, right, for me to do this alone. Even my wedding, like I remember being at my wedding and thinking, okay, well, I didn't make this goal, but in 10 years from now, I'm going to do my vow. We're going to renew our vows. We're going to do everything again. And by that time, I will. I even thought that having children was going to make me like, suddenly changed. And I just wasn't aware that this was a disease that that I didn't have control over. And it made me really hate myself because I was like, what, you don't care? You don't care about your kids? Is that why? And I really started to think that I was just a bad person. And then later on, reality really hit me when I had a new goal, and it was to be healthy and whatever at 30 years old. And I was 29. And this is when reality hit me because I was at my top weight. And I thought, by 30, I'm gonna, do all these amazing things. Meanwhile, I'm pushing over 260 pounds and at the worst in my physical, mental, and spiritual, being. I was just horrible, living as a shell of a human being, and I hurt my back. And that left me in complete misery. I had two young kids at that time, 3 and 5 years old, and my husband, who was the sole provider for our family, had to now work two jobs as a mom and a dad because I couldn't be there for anyone, and I certainly couldn't show up for my kids or for myself. And I was just always angry, yelling, and restless, irritable, discontent is the perfect way to say it, right? And so I got into another 12-step program. And in that program, it was during the pandemic, and I met a lady there, and she asked me, we would do step work together. And she asked me, she said, have you ever heard of Overeaters Anonymous? And do you know what that is? And I said, huh, well, I can take a guess about what that is. And I was highly offended that she had even thought that to say that to me, but I was also very intrigued because she had lost 40 pounds and she looked great. And I went into the rooms and I changed my name and I turned my camera off and I listened and I heard the word abstinence and I thought, well, I can do that. So I decided to do this on my own and that lasted about a week. And I got my all-time binge food. I ate it. But this time it was so different for me because I had heard what you all had said in the rooms. I was aware of the obsession, the compulsion, this disease, and that it was a disease. And I caught myself, walking to the pantry, telling myself just one more, negotiating with my food, constantly thinking about it. And I was shocked. I was like, wow, I really do belong in that program. And so it was shocking, but it was connecting for me to feel also just so welcome and that other people had also experienced this disease. So I couldn't deny at this point that I was a compulsive overeater and that these foods were not only getting me drunk, but they were killing me. And I was so disturbed that I got into a meeting that night and I found my very first sponsor. And I just asked the first person who put her number in the chat. And I consider myself extremely lucky because she put me on this like very rigid, this is rigid food plan. And that effectively eliminated all of my alcoholic foods without me, knowing it. And it wasn't easy. She told me what I was going to eat basically, and I did it. And I did that. And I will say my first day of program, I cried. I got in my car, I got the groceries that she had told me to get, and I sat in my car and I just cried. because I had been using food, and here I am thinking about how I'm not going to be able to have that thing anymore that I had used from when I was a kid. But I learned something very important, which was that I would not be in charge of my own food, and that I could no longer eat the things that I had told myself that I could eat for years. And I continued that plan for a year and a half. And then I went to the birthday party in LA in 2024, and I attended a sober eating workshop. And I had already started to question the sustainability of that rigid food plan. And so this was like really interesting to me. And I went to this workshop, and there was a woman who got up in front of the whole room filled with people. And she was the only woman on the panel. And she spoke about her growth and her recovery with such vibrance and confidence. And she just looked so alive to me. And despite like the painful history that she was talking about, and I thought, I need this, and I need her in my life. I asked her to sponsor me, and I started sober eating. I fired myself that day completely. I mean, I had fired myself already, but like again, from making my own food decisions. And I knew that that food was an area that I could never judge rationally as like a normie person. And I can't eat without impunity. So today, what that looks like is I rely on men and women in this program, in the fellowship, to help me with my food. I report my food. I reach out for food decisions. I don't do anything alone. I can't do it alone. I've really recognized that throughout my life. And I don't eat food without consulting with another person, whether that's reporting or asking, for a change or figuring out what my change is going to be. And through that process, I've developed asking when I need help in other areas of my life too. It's not just about the food. It starts with what's on my plate, and it goes out in all the other areas that I need in my life. I weigh and measure my food, and I practice, which allows me to practice rigorous honesty about identifying those alcoholic foods, weighing and measuring them every day. And wouldn't you know, that also goes out in all the other areas of my life as well. And I can be honest with who I am as a person, with the people in my life. And so it's just, it's it the promises for me come true in those ways. But I had to become sober. I've received freedom from the food, from the obsession, and from this disease one day at a time that made me completely miserable. And I'm able to connect with fellows and my higher power because I'm sober and I'm not cloudy and drunk in my mind. I think that developing mental clarity around all the aspects of my other around my life has been super important. And I just don't do things alone. I can show up as a mother, a wife, a fellow, all the things that I had fantasized about. I am that person now. It's incredible. It's my reality. And I just want to end by saying I'm so incredibly grateful for this gift. And my hope is that by sharing my story with all of you, that you receive encouragement, hope, and belief that this program works, because I'm never alone as long as I just don't take that first compulsive bite. Thank you.
Thank you, Danielle, so much. We're now going to take a minute for the seventh tradition. So here in this space, we're going to pass the basket. But for we are self-supporting through our own contributions. However, giving is strictly volunteering. We will pass the basket, as I said, at the live meeting, and request anyone online to contribute to the link that Michelle is posting in the chat. So we're going to time 1 minute for everyone to take that time to decide what they want to do regarding the seventh tradition. Okay, thank you, everyone. Now we're going to go to part two of the Sober Eating Workshop, which is where Lindsay and Danielle will review the sober eating principles.
Hi, I'm Amber, compulsive overeater. Grateful to be on here with you
Apologies,
guys. Oh,
Amber.
that's
Thank
okay.
you.
That's okay. I know who you meant. Yeah, my name is Amber. I'm a compulsive overeater. I have been in program for since 2005. I came back into program and started working a really strong recovery program in 2021. And in 2023, I found sober eating. And I just wanted to give a little backstory about how I came in. When I came back in 2021, I was 242 pounds, and as of yesterday, I'm down 108, thanks to working a food sobriety program and and keeping fit spiritual condition. So let's just go through these slides here. Sober eating. This is not a prescribed food plan, but a method for defining a food plan by consulting with others. I don't all I do in sober eating is I ask for help. That's what I'm doing in sober eating. I'm just asking somebody else on what they're hearing when I'm talking about food. And then with that, I get to put my alcoholic food on a list and my non-alcoholic foods on a list. Sober eating is just the beginning of this program. For me, it had to start with my plate, because until I put the food down, I couldn't be conscious on what else was going on around me. So it definitely has to start for me with the food, but it is just the beginning of the program for sure. Sober eating may help us to surrender and to access a power greater than ourselves that can restore us to sanity, both with our food and our lives. Putting down the food has given me such clarity and sanity in my life. And that did not happen overnight. Believe me, it did not happen overnight, but I am much clearer in my life today, and I am much more sane. I'm not a raving lunatic, and my head is not constantly having food chatter. This is not the only approach to abstinence. Sober eating is not the only game in town. I mean, there's a lot of other ways to do OA. This is just particularly what has worked for me, because it's very black and white, which is what my disease requires.
All right, so what is food addiction? So we're gonna look at the doctor's opinion, which is in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it's gonna talk about the allergy of the body here. So it says, we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. That the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. And once having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence, their reliance upon things human, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. So, first and foremost, let's talk about what is an allergy, right? Like what does that mean when it says the action of alcohol, or in our case, alcoholic foods, alcoholic food ingredients? What does that mean that's a manifestation of an allergy? So here's the definition. It's a damaging response by the body to a substance to which it has become hypersensitive. It's a chronic condition involving an abnormal reaction to an ordinarily harmless substance. So I identify with it's a damaging response, right? My body got to 350 pounds. My ankles were swollen, red, and splotchy, right? Like there was a damaging response by the body to this substance, to my alcoholic foods and ingredients. And then also I had an abnormal reaction to something that's ordinarily harmless. When my sister buys ice cream, she has one serving. She will literally take a half cup and pack the ice cream into it and put it in a little bowl and have one every night or every other night. Like, there is nothing in my life that I understand less than that. How in the world can you have a half a cup of ice cream and move on and not be obsessing and not have your entire life thinking about how you're going to get more ice cream and more cookies, cakes, pizzas, fries, mozzarella sticks, sodas, all the things, right? Like, that's an abnormal physical reaction that my sister does not have. So this passage tells me I can never safely use my alcoholic foods and food ingredients in any form at all. And so that's what we'll be looking at here later on in the workshop. What are those foods and what are those food ingredients? And then I just have to get gut level honest about what foods and ingredients are like alcohol for me. And what of those foods produce the phenomenon of craving? So to be clear, right? Like, the phenomenon of craving means once I start, I can't stop, or I don't even have to keep eating that food. It's just that it produces a phenomenon of craving and I want to eat more of something else or anything else. So oh, Amber, you're muted.
Sorry. Later, what is food addiction? Later, the big book talks about the obsession of the mind. Men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They are restless, irritable, discontented, unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks, drinks which they see others taking with impunity. After they have succumbed to the desire again, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through the well-known stages of esprit, emerging remorseful with the firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over, and unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. Before I came into OA, I knew that I ate differently. I mean, I just knew that once I ingested it, I couldn't put it down, I couldn't stop. And I was different than everybody else around me, when it came to eating. No matter how much I ate, I was always looking for more, and I loved that high feeling that I would get from the substance. I could relax then. I was no longer irritable. That discontent would fade away. The more my disease progressed, the more food I needed to feel calm. I always say that I am like a heroin addict with a tourniquet on my arm, and that's what food is for me. I always hope for stopping. I would always have good intentions for the next day, but the second that, like Lindsay was saying, the second that phenomenon of craving would start, there was no turning that off. I called it a bad tennis match in my head that was just back and forth and back and forth. And the second I would take my substance back, that phenomenon of craving came knocking, knocking on the door. And coming into OA and putting those alcoholic foods has given me the psychic change. I had to put down the substance in order to get the psychic change. It does not happen, the chicken before the egg or whatever. It doesn't happen. It cannot happen that way for me. I had to put down the substance in order to get recovery.
All right, so definition of abstinence in OA: the act of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. So, the real problem here is my alcoholic mind. It tells me that, right? That my problem centers in my mind. So I abstain from my alcoholic foods and ingredients so that I can find a relationship with a power greater than me, right? I abstain so that I can find peace and serenity. Otherwise, it's just a diet. And I can't stay on a diet. That doesn't work for me. I can't stop from starting. So, like I said earlier, my sobriety starts on my plate. I practice spiritual surrender every day by following my food plan, by putting my food on a scale. And as my sponsor says, I usually every morning I have to take off one blueberry, right? Like I'm a 43-year-old woman who can't determine how many blueberries that she needs to eat, right? So I have to take one off, and that's the spiritual surrender, right? I'm surrendering. And so again, the solution here is spiritual. My problem is lack of power, capital P. So once I'm separated from my alcoholic foods through abstinence, then the steps allow me to develop a relationship with a power greater than myself. And that is how I stay stopped.
What is food addiction? Not being able to stop eating certain foods once you start. The second I ingest any kind of sugar, that's it, I'm done. And when I say sugar too, it is mainly refined sugar, but I do abstain from other sugar substances also, but I cannot take any kind of sugar in any kind of form, because if I do, that craving starts, the obsessive craving for certain foods. I mean, yes, I'm going to not only that, but I'm going to make up for lost time. I have not had these foods in a very, very long time, so I am going to make up for lost time. So the obsessive craving for certain foods is the list is a mile long. Thinking you can control your intake of alcoholic foods. For me, that's wishful thinking. I cannot have alcoholic foods on my plate. It just There is no control for me. I've never had any kind of control. Even as a child, I didn't have control over alcoholic foods. Negotiating with the food. I'm a huge negotiator when I am in the food. I negotiate what, how much is on my plate, what I should have. Should I do this? Should I do that? In sober eating, for me, there is no negotiation with the food because somebody else is in charge of that. So if I have a question, I run it by somebody else. Is it using food to instantly change your state of mind? I have actually done this in sobriety. I lost my abstinence in sobriety by using non-alcoholic foods to change my state of mind. If I can make that plate a little bit bigger, it's going to change how I feel inside for sure. So I have to be transparent with my plate. Over time, always going back to the food. I have been in and out of relapse. The majority of the time that I have been in recovery, I mean, I have to say since 2021, this is the strongest recovery that I've had. But I will my disease. I mean, I'm an addict. I'm always going to choose the food. I'm always going to go back to the food because that's the only thing I've ever known. So with sober eating and with my recovery, it's teaching me something else. It's teaching me another way to quiet the addiction.
So what is sobriety with the food? What are we talking about here, right? So number one, it is a commitment to identifying the foods that produce an allergic reaction and an alcoholic response, right? So the allergy of the body and the twist of the mind. So as we've said, like alcohol is for the alcoholic. What are those food items and food ingredients for you, right? So what I mean is sometimes it's, I'll give you an example, right? For me, pizza. Pizza is not like one of my number one alcoholic foods. I can't have pizza in any form. I can't have pizza with cauliflower crust. I can't have pizza with regular crust. I even made these little eggplant discs. I didn't even mean to do this. I wasn't trying to recreate pizza, but it was like eggplant with some marinara and cheese. And I was like, nope, can't do it. It was too much like pizza for me. So that's a food. There are also ingredients that I or others have to abstain from, right? So the sober eating worksheet that Jenny has been putting in the chat, that's what we're going to look at. And that's where we're going to list all of these things out. What are the foods that produce an allergic reaction? And here's the truth, right? Like as someone's sponsor, it does not impact me one way or another if you're honest. It only impacts you if you're honest, right? It only impacts me if I'm honest. So, it's an opportunity to get that gut level honesty about what are those things really for me. And then let's see, a belief that we owe it to ourselves to deal with our alcoholic foods like an alcoholic deals with alcohol. They abstain 100%. And then our aim is, with the help of a higher power, to arrest the addiction by removing foods that activate our cravings. So again, as a reminder, without the help of a higher power, this is just a diet. That's all this would be. All right, go ahead, Amber.
What is sobriety with food? So, sobriety for me with food is I can make sane decisions about your food, but not my own. My best thinking got me up to 242 pounds. So, I cannot make sane decisions about food at all. Now, but other people can. Other people can help me. I can help you. I can say that sounds sane or that does not sound sane to me, but I can't make that decision for me because for me, it always is going, the disease is going to say that looks sane. Yeah, two potatoes on one plate looks absolutely sane to me. So I have to ask for help. All food decisions are made in consultation with someone, wives, coworker, sponsor, fellow, anybody but you. One time I had made some eggs, and it was when eggs were really expensive, and I couldn't remember if I added an extra egg. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to throw this out. I'm not throwing this out. This is like $20. And then I was like, wait a minute. All I got to do is ask somebody else what they said, what they think. They gave me a suggestion, and I took it. It's just not me. That's all it is it's just not me making the decision. A prescribed amount of food. I have a prescribed amount of food. I do have a weighted measured food plan, so I do follow that. And I also follow where I take pictures of my food. I have to be very extremely transparent with my food, and I take pictures of my food and I send my plate to my sponsor and I send my plate to my sponsees because the more people that are in my business with my food, the less likely the disease is going to come out.
Okay, there's the unmute button. Okay, why are there struggles with food sobriety? All right, well, lots of reasons. I think the funniest thing is that this idea that I wasn't struggling with the food. I lost, right? Like the food won a long time ago. It was an illusion that I was struggling. Like I had no control, right? But willfulness, relying on myself to fix this, to make it better, entitlement, denial or minimizing, right? Like in the beginning, I want to eat and I need help. And even now, hey, I saw a commercial and that food looked really good and I'm going to tell somebody and I'm not going to minimize it. I'm not going to minimize, right? I'm a food addict. Yes, sometimes food's going to look sexy. Welcome to reality, right? Isolation, that's a big one, right? When I start having a bunch of unreturned voicemails on my phone, my food sobriety is at risk. When I'm isolating, when I'm not showing up at meetings, how many meetings are you going to where if you don't show up, somebody's going to notice, right? Do you have that kind of community? I know better, hunger, ego, edging God out, this idea of a graduation, right? Like I've arrived. Now I got this. I'm doing well. I've gotten some time. It's like, no, you know what? We all just have one day at a time. I've had 4.5 years of one day at a time. I have a sponsee who's on day one today. She and I, we're the same. We both have the one day today. And that's really how I look at it. And I also love this idea. It's in the AA 12 and 12. In single-handed combat, I'm gonna lose every time. So I cannot go at this alone. I can't go at it alone in the beginning. I cannot go at it 4.5 years later. I'm sure those with more time than me on this call would say the same thing.
Why are there struggles with food sobriety? Once the obsession has been triggered, the negotiation with the food, eating gray area foods, fat serenity, and selective honesty. Yes, once the obsession is triggered, that's it. You know, like, I mean, we can be sober for 6 months, but all of a sudden we think that we can take something back, or negotiating with the food, or maybe I can have this again, or, you know, I can have that food, but not this food. I mean, once we take those back, that's it. We're done, you know. And, you know, the Fat Serenity, you know, I looked at pictures of myself in this program since 2005, and I did have Fat Serenity. 90% of the time, I was still morbidly obese in this program, saying that I was abstinent. And I know today that I was not. I was, you know, wanting my cake and eating it too. And it just wasn't. It wasn't the honesty. It was selective honesty for sure. I mean, I always edited what I told somebody. I told somebody what I thought they wanted to hear, not what I should have been saying.
So what is it? What is struggling, this idea, this illusion of struggling sound like, right? I ate too much, but here's the recovery. My food is getting wonky. I'm abstinent, but I'm in the food. You know, technically abstinent or abstinish. And this isn't to be judgmental or critical, but this is simply to say, like, in sober eating, like, I'm either using or not using. Like, I am not abstinent, but in the food. That is not, like, there's no world in which that exists. This is black and white. I get clarity here. There's no gray area. And I don't have to do any of it alone, right? I'm talking to my sponsor. I'm talking to my dietitian. I'm talking to my fellows. I'm getting really honest and I expose what's going on my plate. You know, we have a women's group that meets 2 times a week and we talk about what's going on our plate. We talk about things that could threaten our sobriety with the food so that we don't show up at meetings and say, my food's getting wonky, right? We're talking about it before it happens.
What it looks like to be sober with food, the 10-step promises from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as if it's from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is a miracle. That's the miracle of it. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor we are afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition.
On that.
I am, you know, I it has been removed for me. I do have food neutrality, and I don't know how that happened. I don't know when that happened, but all I know is when the shit hit the fan, I didn't look to the refrigerator for the results. And how that happened, you know, it's just by the grace of God, and it's by all of these people in this room that have helped me along the way. What does it look like to be sober with food? I have many problems, but food is no longer one of them. And I'm grateful for that today. You know, the food chatter is gone. And there is somebody in sober eating that says, you know, my life could be in the toilet today, but my food does not change. And I can honestly say that for myself, that it does not matter what is going on in my life. My food doesn't change. So with that, I pass.
Reva,
Reva,
you're muted.
Thank you very much, Amber and Lindsay. So now we're going to go to the next part, which is we're going to actually ask someone, a volunteer from either online or in the room, to go through the worksheets with Danielle. Layla would like to do it. So that would be great. So, Danielle, can you work with Layla here?
Excellent.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go.
Okay, and I think Bonnie is gonna. Hi, what is your
Hi,
name?
Leah.
Leia. Hi, Leia.
We
I
screen
think.
share? Can we screen share possibly the printouts if we weren't able to download them?
I think they're going to post them again, and because what we're going to use is a whiteboard here, and our lovely Bonnie is going to help me to track Leia's alcoholic foods so that we can all kind of go along. But we will have an opportunity after this to get in breakout rooms, and then everyone will have a chance to kind of go over this a little bit.
Hi, I'm Michelle, compulsive overeater. Hi, I just wanted to add that if you didn't get a chance to print these out, you can just write it down on paper. It's not a lot of writing. You can just follow along and write it on a notepad if you need to.
Great point, Michelle. Are we able to get Leia? Because I can't see her.
I'm right here. I see
I
me.
mean, I'm sorry for the Zoom. I'd like to be able to see you. Is that possible, Michelle?
Yeah, put my face on the big
I
screen.
just, there you
Thank
are.
you.
Okay, awesome. Okay, so can we just, before we start this, I want to say you should be able to see Bonnie's screen share with the whiteboard. You can zoom in, move it around. Everyone online should be able to do that. And can we just get a big, let's see some hands for Leia because I mean, this is a difficult process, and there's a lot of people here today. So, thank you for volunteering to show everyone what this is about. I want to start by, we'll start by identifying your alcoholic foods. And I'd like to start by asking you when Amber and Lindsay were going over all of those principles of sober eating, were there any foods that specifically you thought about that need to be on your list?
Hands down, it's sugar, anything sugar related, and including lookalikes, sugar free, anything dessert,
Okay.
anything that looks or smells like a dessert is game over for me.
Perfect. So lookalikes, sugar-free. You're pointing out some really, I think, important things here. Like lookalike foods, you mean like sugar-free almond flour
Yeah,
cookies.
if it looks
Okay.
like a cake, I will murder it.
Me too. That's a great point.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome. So, and then now when you say sugar, I want to ask, do you also think about like honey? Is it agave? Is it like
Not
those
as
kind of things?
much. Not as much. Like if I have coffee, I put, Splenda in my coffee, or I'll have tea with honey sometimes.
Okay.
Doesn't really bother me in any way. But again, like if it's pretending to be something that is like a sweet treat for me, I can't do it.
Okay. So basically refined sugar
Right.
is on there. Okay. Gotcha. And then lookalikes. And all right. And that also leads me to ask, what about bread?
I don't eat bread with sugar added to it. I choose to get Ezekiel bread or Ezekiel English muffin. And I don't eat bread that often. So it's not like
Okay.
it doesn't trigger me the same, but I also am not going to eat like white bread.
Okay. So you don't eat white bread because you choose not to? Is it because it is an alcoholic food for you?
Honestly, I choose not to, but I would, it has so much sugar in it that I just choose not to engage with it.
Okay. And you're bringing up another good point here is like, and Lindsay mentioned this as well, is like we have our alcoholic foods and then we also have alcoholic ingredients. And I'm curious when you say, sugar, are you also including foods that have ingredients? Because I know some people will do, after the fifth ingredient or something like that.
Sometimes I do. I did a version, I think, like the food plan that I follow, I don't do anything I think past like the fifth, ingredient for sugar. When I cut sugar out entirely from my meal plan a while back, before I had relapse, it was a little bit too restrictive for me, but at the same time,
Okay.
most of the foods that I really enjoy don't like I eat, I don't know. I eat pretty clean on the meal plan that I'm on.
Okay, so sugar as an ingredient after the fifth is fine for you. Like you wouldn't. Okay, perfect. And then on the topic of bread, what about things like pizza? You know, when Lindsay mentioned pizza, I was like, yep, that's on my top too. And I'm just curious, how about you?
And I mean, honestly, not really, but I feel like I'm supposed to say yes because pizza is literally a food that I know is meant to be an addictive like vessel. I've watched documentaries about it, so I want to say I shouldn't eat it, but it doesn't do anything for me. But when I eat pizza, it's usually at a time, 9 times out of 10, if I'm ordering pizza or if I'm having it with somebody, it's because it's like a comfort food. So I will say that. But it's not actively like a thing that like triggers me after I eat it.
What do you mean by that when you say when you have it, it's normally a comfort food?
The exact way it sounds. Like last night it was really cold and crisp and rainy in LA, and I wanted to order a cauliflower crust pizza, and I did not, but I wanted to, and it was in my DoorDash, and then I thought of it and was like, you know what, this just doesn't feel super sober, so I'm not going to do it today. But I, you know, it just would have been nice for the cold day.
Okay, so you can eat it weighed and measured. So if
Yes.
you were to say, I'm going to eat only 2 pieces of pizza, you could stop and you wouldn't have that phenomenon of craving and you wouldn't continue thinking about it and having to get one more slice. Or I'm just curious how that works.
You know, I don't know. I feel like most of the time when I like if I'm eating pizza with my family because it's something that everybody orders, I can have 2 slices and not think about it again. But I think it's under the circumstances, right? Like if I had ordered it last night, it might have been like, oh, well, it's cold and rainy and I want to go back for more. But it's not something that like I eat and I constantly think about, if that makes any sense.
It does, and I think that you're bringing up a good point. You know, there are for me, pizza is on my alcoholic list, and the reason is that there are times before, you know, I entered into OA where I did have like one or two slices, and there, but then there were also times where I could not stop, and I think that it's the unpredictability of that food. That, like, I know that if I weigh and measure, you know, a cup of broccoli, I'm not going to eat anymore after that. I don't know that when I'm saying, oh, I'm going to have one piece of pizza. And I think that's why I put pizza on my alcoholic list because it produces that craving, not every time, but when it does, it's undeniable. I can't not eat. The other thing is, like, what you mentioned is using it in times of like comfort, you know, and so ultimately, and I think you brought up another good point is that, you know, you mentioned that you felt like pizza, you have to say yes because everybody says yeah. But that's the thing about sober eating is that not everybody's food is going to look the same. There is no diet plan that we give that everybody follows. It's tailored to you. So, as you've heard, I'm sure, like rigorous honesty, you know, it's about this is for you. So, if you believe that pizza should be on this list, then, you know, I think we should put it on there. If not, then, you know, we won't.
I at this point I'm going to say it doesn't need to be on there, and I really appreciate you saying that.
Yeah. Okay. And I do want to put a little disclaimer out there for anyone in the audience that like I would typically do this with a sponsee and I would continue to work with them. So if pizza ever did come up again, we would revisit this, you know, and we would talk about it. That's what this is about, right? Is working together. Okay. So I do want to ask you, we're running out of time quickly here, but I do want to kind of go over a couple more things. Anything salty, crunchy? That stands out to you.
Popcorn, part of my new abstinence in this recovery is to not eat out of bags or boxes directly. I have to weigh and measure everything. So, but like popcorn in the abstinence, normally it used to be sugar. Like sugar is definitely my diehard, but I found other things that were like munchy, you know, that I just don't partake in because I can't eat out of a bag or a box. But it would have been popcorn, chips. Popcorn and chips, I would say, are the two bigger ones.
Awesome. I think you're literally like 2 steps ahead because you're going into eating behaviors and attitudes too, and we'll go over that. But like eating out of a bag or a box, that's more of like a behavior, right? But we also talk about that in sober eating. Okay, so popcorn, chips, how about pretzels, anything like that, or do you no?
No,
Okay.
it's
All
not my
right.
first choice by any means, but popcorn's become dangerous, especially because there's so many good brands now. It's stupid.
There are.
Yeah.
How about dried fruit?
I never have dried fruit with sugar added, but dried fruit out of a bag directly, like the Trader Joe's bags, I don't partake in that anymore. I really just eat my fruit whole at this point. Yeah.
Okay. Weighed and measured, it would be fine.
Weighed and measured, it'd be fine. Yeah.
Okay. So we wouldn't put that on there. How about fried foods?
I don't really like fried foods. I mean, like, I'm not gonna push away a chicken finger or whatever back in the day, but like, I don't eat fried foods that often. So it's not, I'm too Californian.
Do you think that it would be alcoholic for you if you did
I don't
partake in
really
that?
like, I
Okay.
used to peel the skin off of fried chicken, so I
Oh, okay.
just, yeah, but I love French fries. I'm American and human, so I love French fries, but I wouldn't consider them an alcoholic food necessarily. I don't know,
So
I just don't love
foods.
it
So
doesn't
French
really taste.
fries wouldn't be, would those be on your alcoholic list?
French fries?
Yeah.
No, because
Okay.
they don't trigger the phenomenon of craving for me. They're
Okay.
delicious, but
Yeah.
I
Yeah.
can eat them like a
Okay.
week. Yeah.
All right. Sounds good. And then another thing I typically like to go over is fast food.
I don't really eat it anymore at all. So,
Okay.
In-N-Out is the only one I think that I've eaten in the last since I came to OA, honestly. I think In-N-Out's the only one that I've eaten. Yeah, and it doesn't do anything for me. But also, fast food's too expensive these days. So who's doing that anyways? It's no, thank you. I'm good.
And it doesn't trigger that craving in you or that want to have more.
You
Okay.
mean like if I went to In-N-Out right now? No.
Okay.
But I don't do any other ones, so yeah.
Okay, and then cheese, creamy foods, mayonnaise, butter. For me, it's a lot of it is like salt, fatty, salty, fatty, sweet.
Sweet for me is the primary. I don't use butter when I cook. I don't like cheese. I'm really weird. I'm giving you not enough material, I know, but I don't really like cheese. Yeah, I don't know.
All
That's
right.
not my thing.
Okay. Never had a problem with that.
Not with cheese. Not with cheese.
Okay.
No.
All right. For the sake of time, we're just going to move on to the eating behaviors, but I normally would spend more time with you drilling down on like, getting deeper into this. So let's go to the behaviors and attitudes. So you mentioned eating directly out of a bag. And what are some other things that you think? Like for me, I know that if I had a bad day, I might justify, oh, well, I had a really bad day. That's an attitude that I have towards food.
Yeah, I would definitely the people, places, and things affect for sure how I'm feeling. You know, it's like, oh, this was a crap day. Let me have a little bit more of this.
Okay.
Whatever it is, you know.
Okay. All right. So the way that you're feeling emotionally, how your day went, that's one. Okay. How about snacking? Do you have snacks in your
I have
food plan?
optional snacks, yeah, in my food plan. I think it gets hardest for me when I am on set. I work in the industry, and so it is very difficult for me when I am
on set to be running and doing my job and crazy, and then have all this like an abundance of food and everyone mindlessly eating. Like that's what people do. So it's hard not to do that while working for me. But
Okay.
yeah.
Do you ever think like, oh, I wish, like I could do that too
Of
and
course.
eat
Of
like that?
course.
Yeah.
Of
So
course.
that would be like an attitude, totally, right?
Yeah.
Of like, well, what about me? Yeah, I totally can relate to that as well. And let me see. Okay, how about family style eating when there's like a big pot on the table and you're kind of eat, everyone's just eating out of that pot or something like similar to that, where everything's just on the table.
I mean, I think I'd be lying if I didn't say I was hyper aware of what everyone else was putting on their plate, because then I can't look like the fat girl who takes too much. But that's the first thing that comes to mind. I don't know if that translates to what you're asking.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. I think that's an attitude, and I can relate to that too because I am hyper aware of like what others see, how I think that others see me. I think that's an important thing to put here, and just to be mindful of that because that can affect the way that I eat. I used to go to a restaurant, order the meal, put half in a box. Oh, I'm so full, and then I'd go home and eat the other half, right? So yeah, it absolutely changes. Now I don't do that. I eat all of my food that I planned. So, okay, how about like watching cooking shows or participating in those kind of things?
I mean, I literally worked on a cooking show, and that was a little bit of torture.
Okay.
But no, I mean, I don't really watch them so much. I do really love watching baking shows, and I haven't had sugar in like 7 years. But like, I just think the artistry is really fun, but I don't find it triggering because it's like artistry to me.
Gotcha. Okay. What about going on vacation? I hear this often where people go on vacation and they prep and they get ready and they're like prepared and then they get home and their refrigerator is empty, and they're like, well, I didn't plan for this. We call it re-entry. I'm curious. Or even just being on vacation, like when you're out there,
Yeah, I do pretty decent on vacation. I mean, like, I feel like I can always find something within my food plan, but you're absolutely right with the coming home because, like, I'd like to say the last vacation I went on, I was like, I came home and thought I was a Rockefeller because I kept ordering as opposed to cooking for myself, which I was totally capable of. So it is hard to not get into that mentality of like going out all the time or eating, ordering in or whatever.
okay. All right, I've got one more for you and then we can move on. But buffets.
Tear them up. I mean, I haven't been to one in a while, but they are very, very triggering for me.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the tiny plates and all of it. Yeah, I can relate to that as well. I want to just stop for a second and just say you're doing a great job. This is so hard, and all of us have done this process. Like, I mean, I cried after I found out, like after I put things on my list and I really kind of started digging deep. So thank you again for doing this. And does anybody else, Reva, do you have any suggestions on behaviors and attitudes or
Oh,
alcoholic foods that I had?
we got a suggestion here.
Yeah.
It's what? Nut butter?
Oh,
Yeah,
that's a good
don't.
one.
You know what's funny? Do you mean like, can I do peanut butter? Only if it's weighed and measured. Like when I took out that, when I made my abstinence revolve around eating out of things, it changed the game for me, and I have to weigh and measure. If I don't weigh and measure,
Yes.
yeah, it's too touchy for me. So.
Yeah, and that's a great, I'm glad that you brought that up because in sober eating, we do have a prescribed amount, a prescribed food plan that each of us follows. Sometimes it's the one, like as they mentioned, it's a one plate rule or it could be weighed and measured. For me too, that was a game changer. So thank you. And thanks for that suggestion as well. So next one is people that we can reach out to for food decisions. So I will definitely, all the women here hosting this today will be posting their phone numbers. We have a phone list. Please take down our numbers and just pick Four people. You can refer to that list and ask about food changes. We all know what you're doing here. And then I'm going to go to tools. What are some tools that help support your sobriety today?
Well, outreach, if I did more of it, definitely. My morning routine is really has become very important to me, which is just consists of doing my reading, my writing, a little bit of step work. Tools. I taught, yeah, I mean, I'm not shy. I talk about the disease with people, you know, and a lot of people in my life know that I am in program, but yeah, I should probably be doing, I say this in every meeting. I'm so ridiculously sorry, but yeah, I should be doing more outreach and relying on fellows. And no, I do not text or call when I am changing my food or making a food decision without having committed because I'm stubborn.
Well, it's your lucky day. You're going to get a long list of phone numbers, and we're all happy to chat. You know, I think that's one of the most amazing things about this program is that we're all connected, and I can pick up the phone and call anybody and know that, you know, you're going to understand what I'm going through. And especially if we are doing sober eating and we have those connections in sober eating, like you're going to get what I'm talking about when I say, oh, my alcoholic foods or I need a food change or whatever. And how about meetings? Like, do you do meetings in person, online?
I do meetings in person. I Zoom really does not like I miss more in-person meetings desperately. So my weekends are I wake up very early to come to the weekend meetings in LA and get my recovery. But I am trying to I need to start incorporating more throughout the week, which would be really nice 'cause you guys do like the Zooms just for sober eating throughout the week. That'd be lovely. So
Yeah, you'll get all that information. We didn't have a chance to go through your food plan, but thank you so much again. Like, you were awesome. Probably the easiest one I've ever
oh, sorry.
done. Thank you, Leah. Let's see some hands for her. Thank you so much.
Can you hear me? Can everyone hear me? Okay. Thank you so much, Danielle, and thank you so much for participating. Yes. Okay. We are going to stop the recording, and now we're going to the third part of our workshop, and we're going to go into